Welcome to Base by Base, the papercast that brings genomics to you wherever you are. Thanks for listening, and don't forget to follow and rate us in your podcast app.
Right, so let's get into it.
Yeah, to kick off our deep dive today, I want you, the listener, to think about a real clinical problem. I mean, think about what really happens when doctors try to personalize cancer treatment, only to realize that the patient's data is fragmented across entirely different languages.
It's a huge issue in medicine right now.
Right. Like, you've got blood vials in a lab over here, plain text surgical notes in a computer over there, and massive glass tissue slide somewhere else entirely. How could this change our ability to predict survival if an AI could suddenly read and combine all these scattered clues at once?
It would completely change the game, honestly. When you have all that critical information siloed off across different hospital departments, it's practically impossible to see the true biological reality of the disease.
Exactly. And that brings us to the recognition for today. Today, we celebrate the work of the researchers at Friedrich Alexander University Erlangen-Nuremberg and University Hospital Erlangen, who have advanced our understanding of precision oncology and multimodal machine learning.
Yeah, their work here it's really tackling a massive blind spot. Specifically, we're looking at head and neck cancer.
Which is super common, right?
Extremely. It's actually the 7th most common malignancy worldwide. And, you know, the clinical reality for patients is pretty stark.
How so?
Well, even with all the surgical advances and, like, targeted immunotherapies we've seen over the last 10 years or so, the 5-year survival rate is just stubbornly hovering anywhere between 25 and 60%.
Wow. 25 to 60%. That's a huge range.
Yeah.
So depending on the person, you're either very likely to survive or it's incredibly rare. Why is that so unpredictable?
It mostly comes down to the bluntness of our diagnostic tools. Right now, when you get diagnosed, doctors are primarily looking at macroscopic metrics.
Like the physical size of it?
Exactly. Like, how many centimeters across is the tumor? Or has it reached the nearby lymph nodes? But you could have two patients with tumors that are the exact same size, same clinical stage, and their outcomes will be radically different.
Because the underlying biology is completely different.
Right. The molecular instructions driving the cancers are totally different.
It's almost like, I guess it's like trying to fix two broken cars just because they're both blue.
That's a perfect way to put it, yeah.
You know, the exterior looks identical, but one has a blown transmission and the other just has a dead battery.
Yeah, and treating them the same way obviously won't work. We desperately need reliable biomarkers to look under the hood. Currently, doctors really only have two routine biomarkers for this type of cancer.
Just two.
Basically, yeah. There's HPV association, which usually means a somewhat better prognosis for certain throat cancers. And then there's PD-L1 expression, which just helps flag if a patient might respond to certain immunotherapies.
But that can't be enough to capture everything going on.
Not at all. Trying to map out the chaotic biology of head and neck cancer with just two markers it's like trying to read a whole novel through a tiny keyhole.
So then, you know, you have to ask, why hasn't AI solved this yet?
Mm-hmm.
Hospitals generate mountains of data for every single patient. Scans, blood tests, biopsies. Why hasn't a machine learning model just chewed through it all and given us like a dozen new biomarkers?
It's a data deficit problem.
Wait, a deficit? But there's so much data.
There is, but it's not the right kind of data set. To train a robust AI, you need vast and comprehensive data. Past attempts have totally fallen short. They're either mathematically insignificant, like maybe studies with just 122 or 288 cases.
Which is nothing for AI.
Right. Or, more commonly, they had massive missing gaps. You'd have a group where you have all their genetic profiles, but absolutely no long-term survival data.
Oh, so you can't even tell the AI what the outcome was.
Exactly. Or you have thousands of high-resolution biopsy images, but zero clinical history attached to them.
I see. So it's like the ultimate jigsaw puzzle problem. You have all the pieces, but they're being hoarded by different people in completely different buildings.
Yes, exactly.
The pathologist has the image pieces. The lab tech has the blood work. The surgeon is holding on to the operative notes.
Yeah.
And nobody is laying them out on the exact same table so we can actually see the full picture of the patient.
And until you put them on the same table, the AI can't learn anything meaningful. But that exact roadblock is what this research team finally dismantled.
Okay, so how did they actually do it?
They built this massive new framework called the HAN-NCOCK dataset. It's really a monumental achievement in data curation. We're talking about real-world monocentric data from 763 head and neck cancer patients.
Wow, 763. That's a huge step up.
It is. And the timeline is what gives it so much weight. They tracked the clinical outcomes of some of these patients for up to 14 years.
Wait, really? 14 years of follow-up? That's almost unheard of in machine learning studies.
It really is rare. It means they captured not just the immediate post-surgery survival, but the really long-term recurrences too.
But it's not just the time frame that makes this special, right? It's the variety of those puzzle pieces they brought together.
Exactly. They didn't just grab one modality. They grabbed everything available for a single patient. Demographics, structured pathology data like precise tumor grading.
And blood work too, right?
Yeah, over 20 different blood parameters measured right around the time of surgery. Everything from red and white blood cell counts to renal function and specific inflammatory markers like C-reactive protein.
And they went into the clinical documents as well?
Yeah.
I remember reading they took the actual surgery reports and medical histories, stripped out all the identifying patient info, and translated the German text into English.
Right, so the data set could be utilized globally. And from those translated narratives, they extracted standardized medical codes, the ICD codes for the diagnoses, and the OPS codes.
Which is the German standardized system for logging exactly what surgical procedures were done.
Exactly. That allowed them to strictly categorize the disease and the physical interventions. But, you know, the most complex layer of data they integrated, really the crown jewel of Hansi-Kok, was the imaging.
You mean the massive high-resolution tissue images?
Yes. They included whole slide images, or WSIs.
And those are basically digitized panoramic views of the entire primary tumor and the surrounding lymph nodes, right? Stained with standard dyes.
That's right. It gives you the macro architecture of the cancer. But they didn't stop there. They went a level deeper and included tissue microarrays, or TMAs.
TMAs. That sounds intensely specific. What are we actually looking at when we zoom in that close?
Think of a TMA as a microscopic highlight reel of the tumor's most critical battlegrounds. Pathologists take these tiny 1.5 millimeter cylindrical cores from really specific areas.
Like where exactly?
Like the dead center of the tumor and the leading invasive edge where the cancer is actually pushing into healthy tissue. And then, instead of a standard dye, they stain these tiny cores with antibodies to highlight very specific immune cells.
Right, they stained for CD3 and CD8 T cells, if I recall.
They did. CD3 is a general marker that lights up all T cells, so you get a sense of the overall immune presence. But CD8 is much more specific.
It highlights the cytotoxic T cells, yeah.
Exactly. Those are the assassins of the immune system.
Yeah.
The cells directly responsible for hunting and killing cancer cells.
So by including the TMA data, you aren't just looking at the tumor structure. You are literally quantifying the immune system's exact counterattacks.
Spot on.
But wait, this is an absolute avalanche of data. You've got demographics, 20 different blood markers, standardized surgical codes, macro level slide images, and microscopic immune cell counts.
There's a lot, yeah.
But these are all fundamentally different languages. You can't just feed an immune cell count and a German surgical code into a basic algorithm, right? How does the AI actually process all of that simultaneously?
Well, they used a mathematical technique called early fusion. They took all these disparate languages of data and mathematically encoded them into a single unified string of numbers.
A single string?
Yeah, for every single patient in the data set, they created a 104-dimensional multimodal patient vector.
Oh, wow. So we are essentially turning a complex human patient into a 104-dimensional math problem.
Basically, yeah.
So every single dimension represents a different facet of their biology. Like maybe dimension 12 is their CD8 cell count and dimension 45 is their renal function, all just mapped into one cohesive mathematical space.
That's exactly it. And the reason they use early fusion is crucial here. In machine learning, a lot of models still use what's called late fusion.
Which is terribly inefficient. I mean, it's like, if you're trying to figure out if a cake is going to be good, you wouldn't taste a spoonful of raw flour, then eat a cup of sugar, then swallow raw egg separately, and try to guess the final flavor based on those isolated ingredients.
I love that analogy. Yes, that's late fusion.
Right, so early fusion is mixing the batter first. You blend the flour, sugar, and eggs together into a unified batter, and the AI evaluates the complex combined result.
And that synergy is the entire point. Early fusion allows the model to see the subtle, hidden interconnections between the data types.
Like how things interact.
Exactly. It can learn how a specific inflammatory blood marker interacts with a specific surgical procedure code to actually influence survival. If you keep the data separated until the very end, the AI is completely blind to those biological intersections.
Makes total sense. So we have these 104-dimensional patient batters. Now they have to actually train their AI.
Right, specifically a random forest classifier in this case.
which is basically an algorithm that builds a literal forest of hundreds of different decision trees, has them all independently analyze the patient vector, and then takes a majority vote on the outcome.
That's a great summary, yeah.
But they didn't just split their 763 patients in half randomly to test this forest, right? They used an evolutionary genetic algorithm.
Yes, and the way they split the data is one of the most rigorous methodological steps in the whole deep dive. Normally, you split your data into a training set to teach the AI and a test set to see if it actually learned to predict the future.
Sure.
But if you just do a random shuffle your test set well, it usually ends up looking very similar to your training set. So the AI looks like an absolute genius in the lab, but the second you deploy it in a real hospital with real messy human biology, it fails completely.
Because it just memorized the average patient rather than actually learning the underlying biological rule?
Precisely. So to prevent that, they deployed a genetic algorithm. It evaluated millions of different ways to split the 763 patients, essentially simulating an evolutionary process of survival of the fittest.
Oh.
Yeah, it actively searched for the hardest possible test scenario. It created an in-distribution test set, patients who represent the typical average, and crucially, an out-of-distribution test set.
Let me push back on that for a second. Why go through all the computational trouble of using an evolutionary algorithm just to split data?
Mm-hmm.
Isn't finding the weird outlier cases just going to make the AI look worse?
Well, it makes the initial metrics look lower on paper, yes.
Yeah.
But in complex medicine, you have to prove your AI works on the edge cases.
I see.
The out-of-distribution set is comprised of patients who are maximally dissimilar from the training data, while still maintaining the overall statistical balance of who survived and who didn't. If your random forest model can accurately predict survival for those highly unusual outlier patients, you know you've built a robust, generalizable clinical tool.
Not just a memorization machine.
Exactly.
Okay, that makes total sense. You want the AI that can diagnose the weird cases, not just the textbook ones. Now that 104-dimensional vector brilliantly handles the structured data, the blood work, and the cell counts. But what about those massive whole slide images?
That's a whole different challenge.
Right, because a gigapixel image of a tumor is incredibly vast. You can't just cram a giant panoramic picture into a simple math vector.
You really can't. The images contain far too much complex spatial architecture. So to handle the raw visual data, they utilized an approach called multiple instance learning, or MIL, and they paired it with a specialized histology foundation model called UNI.
The multiple instance learning approach is fascinating to me because it solves a very specific problem.
How so?
Well, the AI knows the patient has cancer, and it knows whether they survived or not. But it has absolutely no idea what specific pixels out of the billions in this huge image explain that survival outcome.
Right. It's totally blind to the specifics at first.
It's exactly like searching for clues in a giant Where's Waldo book. But you don't actually know what Waldo looks like. You just know the cover of the book says Waldo is inside.
I love that. And multiple instance learning is exactly how the AI finds him. The MIL algorithm chops the giant whole slide image into thousands of tiny, manageable patches.
Okay.
It then evaluates every single patch independently and scores how much attention it should pay to it.
But wait, how does it know what deserves attention if it doesn't know what it's looking for?
Trial and error. It learns across hundreds of patients. It figures out that patches showing dense, chaotic cellular structures or fierce battlegrounds where immune cells are swimming the tumor border are highly predictive of survival outcomes.
So flags those.
Exactly. It assigns those patches a massive attention weight. Conversely, it learns to assign near zero attention to large swaths of like uniform fatty tissue or just the blank glass background to the slide. Then it aggregates all those highly weighted clues to make a final slide level prediction.
And the UNI model acts as the visual processor for those tiny patches.
Yeah, UNI is an absolute powerhouse for this. It's a foundation model that was pre-trained using self-supervised learning on massive amounts of histology data from across the entire medical field.
So it already knows what it's looking at.
Right. It already deeply understands what human tissue architecture is supposed to look like before it even glances at the specific head and neck cancer data set. It doesn't need a human to label the cells. It has already learned the visual language of biology.
Okay, so we have the 104-dimensional vectors, the evolutionary data splitting, and the self-supervised visual processing. When they finally let the AI look at all 763 patients, did it actually spot anything real? Let's get into the key findings.
Well, the first major validation was that the HHAN-CVTOP dataset perfectly mirrors clinical reality.
The demographics.
Yeah. The dataset was 80% male, 72% were former or current smokers, and the median age was 61.
Which perfectly aligns with the global epidemiological profile of head and neck cancer.
Exactly. This isn't a niche, highly curated lab cohort. It's real-world data, meaning the AI's discoveries are directly applicable to everyday clinical practice.
But the real moment of clarity for me comes from the UMP visualization.
Oh, absolutely.
The researchers took those invisible 104-dimensional mathematical vectors and ran them through a UMP algorithm, which essentially crushes high-dimensional space down into a 2D map, right?
Right, and it preserves the local distances between the data points so human eyes can actually see the hidden patterns.
And what the UMP revealed was pretty stunning. The complex unified math actually perfectly aligns with real-world biology. When the 763 patients were plotted as dots on this 2D map, patients with similar clinical profiles naturally clustered tightly together.
And remember, the AI hadn't been taught any medical rules. It just looked at the math of the early fusion vectors. But the math naturally grouped them by their disease characteristics.
For example, the map showed HPV-positive patients grouping tightly into a distinct cluster with patients who had incredibly high densities of CD8-positive immune cells.
Which is a beautiful validation, because traditional medicine already knows that HPV-associated tumors typically trigger a very strong immune response, specifically deploying those CD8 cytotoxic T cells.
So the fact that the multimodal math blindly discovered and clustered these patients together proves that blending the blood work, the codes, and the immune counts into one vector actually successfully captures true biological relationships.
Exactly. The math reflects the biology.
But can it predict the future? That's the real test.
It can, and with really significant accuracy. The random forest model, trained entirely on those early fusion vectors, achieved an AUC of 0.79 for predicting both cancer recurrence and overall patient survival.
To put that in context for everyone listening, an AUC, or area under the curve, is the standard metric for predictive power. A score of 0.5 is a literal coin toss, and 1.0 is perfect clairvoyance.
Right.
So getting an AUC of 0.79 across a highly diverse real-world patient population, trying to predict something as chaotic as human biology and cancer survival over a decade, is an incredibly powerful signal.
It's a massive leap forward. But, you know, the true power of multimodality was really revealed when they looked at the synergy of the imaging data.
What did they find there?
They tasked the multiple instance learning model with predicting survival based on the images, and the results were eye-opening. When the model tried to predict survival using only the specific tissue microarrays, the tiny cores stained specifically to show the immune cells, the TMA data alone yielded an AUC of just 0.52.
Basically a coin toss.
Yeah.
Which seems super counterintuitive. I mean, it's looking directly at the immune cells fighting the cancer. Why can't it predict survival?
Because it completely lacks the architectural context.
Oh, right.
Seeing a high count of CD8 assassin cells means absolutely nothing if you don't know where they are. Are they successfully infiltrating the core of the tumor, or are they just trapped outside the tumor's defensive walls in the surrounding tissue?
And the TMA alone can't tell you that.
Exactly. But when the researchers combine the macro-level whole slide images with the micro-level TMAs, the predictive power surged to a 0.69 AUC.
The synergy of multimodality in action. The AI needs the panoramic landscape of the WSI to understand the battlefield, and D, the specific immune details of the TMA to understand the soldiers.
Precisely. And to further prove the power of visual AI, they tasked the UNI Foundation model to predict where a tumor was physically located simply by analyzing the cellular architecture.
Like whether the tissue patch came from the oropharynx, the larynx, or the oral cavity.
Yes. And it reached an incredible 0.96 AUC.
Wait, really? 0.96.
Yeah. It could identify the exact origin of the cancer with near-perfect accuracy just by analyzing the morphological details, like the presence of specific mucosal glands that only exist in certain parts of the throat.
That is wild. So, synthesizing all of this, what does it mean for the clinic? The overarching implication here seems to be that the era of single modality AI is completely over.
Oh, completely over. An AI that only looks at a blood test or an AI that only analyzes an X-ray is leaving far too much critical context on the table.
Right.
If AI models are ever going to actually assist oncologists in making personalized life and death treatment choices, they absolutely must adopt this holistic approach. The human body doesn't operate in isolated silos, so our predictive algorithms shouldn't either.
We have to force the AI to evaluate the whole patient.
Yeah.
But as with any pioneering data set, there are limitations, right? I know the researchers acknowledge that while predicting survival is great, the model is currently only performing binary classification.
Yes, that's true. The AI is essentially answering yes or no questions, like, will this patient have a recurrence within 3 years, yes or no? Or did this patient survive, alive or deceased? It's a binary outcome.
But in the clinic, knowing when an event is likely to happen is often just as critical as knowing if it will happen.
Exactly. Moving from binary classification to a time-to-event regression analysis, meaning predicting the actual timeline of recurrence, is the crucial next step for these modeling algorithms.
There is another limitation they mentioned that feels more like an untapped gold mine to me.
The surgical notes.
Yeah. They extracted the standardized ICD and OPS codes from the surgery reports, but they left the actual plain text narratives completely untouched. The AI hasn't even read the surgeon's actual notes yet.
And that is where some of the most critical nuance lives. Think about it. A standardized billing code just tells you a resection was performed.
Right.
But the surgeon's narrative note tells you how physically difficult the resection was, the fragile state of the tissues, the severity of the bleeding, details that simply don't fit into a clean diagnostic code.
So integrating advanced text embedding transformers like large language models to read and encode those raw narratives, that's going to add an entirely new dimension of context to the eChronSeq dataset.
Without a doubt. And once you add the text, what comes next? The molecular data.
Oh, of course.
The natural progression is integrating genomic sequencing and RNA transcriptomic data. When you can seamlessly combine the DNA mutations, the RNA expression levels, the daily blood work, the surgical history, and the immune stained imaging all into one multimodal framework, we cross a massive threshold in modern medicine.
We step into the realm of digital twins.
Yes. The ultimate goal of this multimodal data structuring is creating a complete functioning digital replica of a patient.
So if you have a true digital twin powered by comprehensive early fusion data, you could literally test cancer care decisions virtually.
Exactly. You could run millions of simulations of different chemotherapy and immunotherapy combinations on the digital twin, mapping out the precise survival probabilities.
All before you ever expose the actual human patient to the toxic side effects of the drugs. That is incredible. So, to wrap this up, by unifying scattered clinical, biological, textual, and imaging data into a single multimodal framework, we can significantly improve our ability to predict cancer recurrence and survival. It basically proves that forcing AI to look at the whole patient rather than isolated fragments is the key to unlocking true precision oncology.
It really is. It's no longer just about generating the data, it's about how we mathematically weave it together to reflect reality.
Which leaves us with a final thought to mull over. We've seen how integrating just a few modalities can massively boost predictive power. So what does this mean for the future of digital twins in everyday medical practice?
Will a digital simulation of your biology eventually become as routine and necessary as a standard blood test? It's a fascinating question.
This episode was based on an open access article under the CC BY 4.0 license. You can find a direct link to the paper and the license in our episode description. If you enjoyed this, follow or subscribe in your podcast app and leave a 5-star rating. If you'd like to support our work, use the donation link in the description. Now, stay with us for an original track created especially for this episode and inspired by the article you've just heard about. Thanks for listening, and join us next time as we explore more science base by base. Hospital halls where the ceiling lights hum. A thousand small signals all start to become one. Slides like galaxies under a glassy white glow. Charts, notes, and numbers in a quiet overflow. We're stitching the fragments so the future can show.
encode the echoes, set the patterns align, fold every modality into a single line. If one view goes missing, the rest still can speak. A map in the noise, a promise we can keep. Make a shape of me from what you can see, from blood and images and the words in the sheets. Put the pieces together, let the hidden light run, so the right next step finds the right someone. In the dark, we don't guess, we learn, we become. Public window wide open to try benchmarks and baselines under patient sky. Self-taught eyes on tissue, learning without names, finding what matters in attention flame. Two kinds of slides, and the signal grows brave. We're not a single snapshot, not a lone test result. We're timelines and textures,